Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Steph Jamin.
When you see something that you've poured so much heart and soul and passion and time and work into, like, appear on an Ironman website somewhere, like, it might not seem like a big deal, but, like, it kind of was. And now I see women wearing Brava, like, everywhere, and I don't know who they are, but they have, like, a kind of a piece of us, like, with them.
On this episode of The Rundown, I dug a little deeper into nutrition with registered holistic nutritional practitioner, Danielle Levy. We discuss our relationship to food, the importance of fueling properly, and how we can approach our meals in a more balanced way. So if you have questions about nutrition and how it relates to sports or in everyday life, you won't want to miss my conversation with Danielle. It will definitely give you some food for thought. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, last Saturday was important for elite marathon runners in the States. It was the Olympic trials in Atlanta, Georgia, where the top three men and top three women were selected for the 2020 Olympic Games in Tokyo. Everything was on the line for those runners, which made for a very exciting race. As you could imagine, it was a competitive field, but many high-profile runners failed to perform at their highest level on a day when it mattered most. On the men's side, it was Galen Rupp who took home the victory and claimed his spot on the U.S. Olympic team despite having a rough year and a half, as he battled through injury and was recovering from an Achilles surgery. Hard to contest that when healthy, Rupp is one of the best marathoners out there. The two-time Olympic medalist will look to make it three in Tokyo this summer. Amongst the female finishers was Molly Seidel, who finished in second place and earned her spot on the team in what was her first marathon ever. Earlier in her career, she struggled with an eating disorder, but overcame it both physically and mentally before continuing running professionally. Can't wait to see how she does against the best in the world this July. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. On top of all the training I do, a lot of the questions that come up for me are with regards to nutrition, especially being plant-based vegan. So I decided to invite a registered holistic nutrition practitioner in today. And so I'm sitting here with Danielle Levy. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome to the run-in.
Yeah, which is what I called it.
welcome to the rundown. It's a pleasure to sit with you and go over. Hopefully we can dig a little bit into nutrition. I think I've tried in past podcasts just with athletes. Our last guest was also a dietitian, sports nutritionist. And I find it really interesting, and there's so much out there just with regards to what to eat and what's the right thing to eat and, you know, what's right for you and all that. So, I'm super interested and, I can't wait to dive into this topic.
Yes. Cool. I'm stoked to be here and to be talking with you as well. It's cool to combine the passion for running and nutrition together. Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Cause they really go hand in hand. I think it's the last thing people think about. They do all the training, they put in all the work and the process, but then they forget to try things in their training. They don't know what to eat on race day, especially when they're just getting into the sport.
Totally.
But it's never introduced like all in one. It's always the last thing people think of. And the longer you go, the more important it gets.
Totally. And that was a surprise to me early on, was that it was so intuitive that to me, at least as just someone who's physically active, that what I ate and even hydration was so key for, you know, just overall like endurance and recovery and just general energy as a human being living day to day. So that it was surprising that a lot of athletes or amateur athletes were just, it was completely a side note to think about nutrition and how much water they were drinking. But then, you know, once they begin, to make some changes, it's exciting because it's like immediately, oh, wow, this does make a difference. And I think that experiential learning is critical because you can read or hear, oh, yeah, nutrition is important. And like everyone kind of knows that. But when you have that firsthand experience in your own body and you experiment and you take control on that level and you just start to integrate some different kind of meals and just sort of like being conscious of like pre and post workout meals and drinking water and that kind of thing, it doesn't take a lot of time to see a big difference. And it's so exciting to me.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's exciting for, and it continues to evolve as well, which is the interesting thing. You always hear new things, which is exciting, but it's also, I think, intimidating as well. And like, what is the right thing, and what do I do?
Yes,
that's
the number one question.
That's the number one question. We'll get to that.
Okay.
I always like to start and kind of see kind of how you grew up and where do you come from and how did you evolve into the person you are today and with nutrition and everything that you do.
Such a huge question.
Yeah, but we could start just from the beginning. Like, were you active as a kid? Were you conscious as a kid?
Like, I was. I was pretty active. I loved dance. I was like always dancing, and I did like a bit of gymnastics and stuff. My parents were very much like, get outside. Like, there's no hanging out in the house watching TV. Like, very hippie parents. So, you know, it was like all winter, all season. It was like go outside and play in nature. So I'm really thankful that I had that part of my upbringing. And also my family was really conscious around like the environment and things like that. So I think the question of like, where does food come from and what am I eating and like being curious, I think that was always part of who I am. And so at a pretty young age, I think I was questioning that, like, what is this, what am I eating and how does it feel? And I've always been pretty sensitive. And so it was really obvious to me when certain foods as a child would like cause a lot of digestive issues, or like I struggled a lot with that growing up, IBS, you know, the term. And so then,
can you break that out?
Sure.
For anybody that doesn't know.
Yeah. Irritable bowel syndrome.
Okay.
Which is pretty common. It's an umbrella term for a variety of like cramps and bloating and like not feeling so good usually around meals. Mm-hmm. And so, so I think I was pretty conscious on that level. And then to be honest, I had a hard time growing up. I had some challenges just around like my home and, generally, it wasn't the easiest. And so I think being outside, being active, dance, and taking control through food in terms of like just doing what I could, taking the steps that I could to take care of myself and focus on self-care was really critical for me as like survival, you know, like learning how to like really, just figure out life and like the basic needs. What are my basic needs? And I think I sort of figured that out early on, that when I ate well, when I was outside, when I took care of my mental health, my physical health, life just got a little bit easier. And I don't think that that has ever changed for me. I think I've always really prioritized those things because I recognize that there's so many things out of our control in life.
How did your parents instill that in you, or how did they introduce you to that way of thinking?
They didn't really. Okay. That kind of came from within, I would say.
Okay.
Almost to cope with maybe more of a chaotic household sometimes, which I think I'm only sharing just because I think a lot of people have had that experience. And so maybe it'll resonate. And in fact, I think a lot of people, especially women, young women, and even men, will sometimes even get into like some disordered eating patterns or workout patterns when they're having sort of like a chaotic home environment when they're growing up. So it's something to be mindful of, especially being a nutrition practitioner and working with people, adults now, where they develop some sort of eating habits that maybe aren't optimal for them and don't serve them. And then we kind of trace back to, where did this come from and where did this start? So it's something to like, it's like planting the seed of like, just reflecting on our relationship with food and like where these things, how these things develop. So I appreciate the question, you know, for everyone to kind of think about sometimes for themselves.
It can be like interesting as a kid too, growing up, when you're trying to figure that out, you know, when you're playing, like I've been active my whole life, just awesome. Like playing sports and
and whatever. But yeah. I remember I went through a phase where I was like measuring my cereal just because what do you know? And totally. It was a really short period, but like I remember, you know, I wasn't a fat kid, but you know, you have like baby fat or whatever. And I asked my mom, I'm like, when will this go away? You know, when does like belly fat go away? And she's like, oh, you'll grow into it, you know, which I think is maybe a response of a lot of parents.
Sure.
But, you know, I did. And, you know, here I am today. But it's
how old were you at that time?
I don't know. I feel like I was like 15. Or
yeah, that's such a typical age for that.
16.
Yeah.
But I never went back to that.
That's awesome.
I went to conscious eating, but not like measuring or anything of that nature. And that can be on top of everything. Just making sure you eat the right food is tough enough. Imagine you had to like, you know, portion every single thing out, which is like a bit chaotic.
So totally. I completely agree with you. And that's certainly not my approach, is not like measuring, counting, using numerical metrics. Really. It's really about sort of tuning into how you feel when you eat things and that sensory or intuitive experience. But I really appreciate your term conscious eating. I think that, I don't know how that resonates. How do you define that? What does that mean for you?
I think just thinking about what I'm eating, what I'm putting in my body, like realizing that what I put in, I'll get out in terms of like energy, but also like allowing myself to also have a balance there too. And like cheat, and
or like not even cheat, just indulge, live
indulge yeah, and like the things that I enjoy,
right?
Like not every day, because it's even as a vegan or plant-based eater, you could still eat like bad food.
Of course,
it doesn't mean that everything's healthy, you know, like A&W has like this Beyond Meat, and it's like it's a way for us to eat fast food, but that stuff's just as bad, you know. It doesn't make it better.
Well, I would say two things in response to that. I think people who work with me know that I am like I'm so obsessed with words. So I'm really cautious of saying sort of good and bad, or like good and bad foods, and like the duality around foods. Cause I think that I don't really believe in that. I think that like you were saying about moderation, that it's like the quantity and the quality of what we eat. And that in fact, there's a health benefit in a way from a holistic point of view to having a flexibility with how we eat, not being so rigid, just in terms of like psychologically, so that a bad food might actually be kind of good if it's eaten with a sort of consciousness, with like the intention and just full enjoyment and no guilt after. And it's not something that's like a daily thing, but it's just some food that you enjoy sometimes, and that's totally cool. And the other thing is the terms of like vegan and plant-based being used interchangeably. So I think that's where we've come, is that most people do sort of, you know, use those terms interchangeably. And that's been a challenge for me because I've been sort of talking about plant-based eating for, I don't know, like 9 or 10 years. And for me, it doesn't, they're both very, they're very different approaches. And so vegan means like zero animal products all together. But for me, the whole food, I say whole food and then plant-based, whole food just means unprocessed, unrefined. So it actually means you're really just eating food that comes from nature that you can really recognize, like a head of broccoli, an apple, you know, it doesn't have like many ingredients to it. It's just straight up. And then the plant-based means mostly plants, but yeah, some people might choose to have some fish or some high quality animal products once in a while. And so it's a much more moderate approach. It's much more flexible and less rigid. And just from my experience, both for myself and just with clients, whether or not people eat that much animal products or not, it's just this, again, psychologically, I'm really interested in that aspect of our relationship with food. And when it's not like, oh, I can never, ever have this, or, you know, I go to someone's house and there's like some, you know, or like, you know, you were talking about bagels before, how like sometimes, you know, there's some honey and something, but you just really want to have a bagel with your homies and like, I can't have it. And, you know, I respect every eater and their own process. But I just think that there's a challenge in that, you know, and it just becomes, food can become really stressful. And then I think stress is like so unhealthy for us. So that whenever there's that threshold, I think whenever we get to the point where food becomes like really rigid and stressful, I just personally don't advocate eating in that way. So yeah, but it's complicated, and it's like a day-to-day process that I think a lot of us have to go through, because a lot of the rhetoric, the, you know, conventional wisdom around diet and nutrition is like, can be pretty extreme, it seems.
For
you
sure.
Know? Yeah.
And it is, it can be stressful for sure.
Yeah.
It depends, I guess, too, what reason you go into it.
Absolutely.
With. For me, I watched a couple documentaries, and it was clear health-wise, in my mind, that way of eating would be better. And I say vegan and plant-based because I say it not for myself, but more for the audience.
Sure.
I feel like people still don't understand what these things are. Like, we still have this old way of, some people have this old way of thinking.
Yeah.
And kind of closed off to the idea that those types of diets have their benefits.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just really, yeah, that I find the hardest part. It's like explaining to my grandma, explaining to Nana why, you know,
oh, wow,
I'm eating this way, but she adapts and kind of makes, you know, she makes my pizza without cheese and like,
oh, yum. Awesome. You know what I mean? What a good Nona.
Yeah, she's great.
I want one.
She's with the times. Oh my gosh. And she's hilarious. She could probably be, I should have her on the podcast.
Please do. Cause I would love to listen to that. That's the greatest.
Yeah.
But you know what? The piece around the social piece, whether it's with our family or friends and misunderstanding, or like, especially if you're transitioning towards a more of a plant focused diet, is a legitimate piece, you know, cause a lot of the time that is a challenge that my clients will report of, like, especially if you're like in the work environment or like more of a corporate environment where, you know, going for lunches and dinners and people are like just eating like really sort of elaborate, like heavy, like rich food. And you're kind of trying to eat more greens and like lentils. And it's just like, how do I navigate that and still be part of this culture that, you know, social culture or work culture that I'm part of? Mm-hmm. Or even people and their partners, like, you know, I have people who come and they're really interested in shifting their diet for health and other reasons, but their family is maybe not on the same level. And so it's like, how do we navigate that? And it's a really big question. Cause again, back to stress, it's like, if this becomes a huge stressor where your diet is like completely makes it that it's hard for you to enjoy family dinners, that's hard. So the more flexible we can be while respecting our own needs and wants and values, you know, I think that's like the key that I try and help people with, find that like sweet spot.
Yeah, exactly. Like those dinner parties are really where that's like usually the hardest part, or going to a restaurant or something where,
yeah,
you know, all you can eat is fries kind of thing, you know, it's tough. So yeah, it's like you bring your own, you just to not complicate the situation, you bring your own food
or absolutely
just ways around, because you want to spend time with your friends and family. And
yes,
if there's no option, then you just, you know, bring some Indian food or whatever, you know, whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, that's huge, because that's actually what I advocate is more cooking for yourself and planning ahead and bringing food. And that's something that is almost the biggest challenge, like lifestyle wise, is like when you're just accustomed to not really thinking about food ahead, you know, and just kind of like going for it.
Yeah.
But then when you adjust your diet, it is kind of important that in order for you to eat well, that you do have that like planning ahead and like bringing your own like salad or dish to the, you know, it's sort of like everything becomes a potluck, you know, but it's for you. But then it's so lovely to share that. And I think it's a really positive way for people to learn about more plant-based eating is when you bring something you've made and you share with them and it's delicious and mm-hmm. they're like, oh, wow, this is awesome. You know?
Yeah. This is good.
This is good. Yeah. Imagine.
Yeah. It's crazy. But so talk about, you know, kind of how you got back to kind of the beginning, how that playing with the foods and getting in tune to your body kind of evolved. And, you know, what were some key learnings like early on that you can remember that you could maybe suggest to somebody exploring these new ways of eating or adapting to different types of diets? So I'll relate it back to kind of when you were a kid or
I think cooking was a really central starting point. It's challenging to eat in a way that really works for you as an individual in your own body when you're relying on food that's not made by you, that has like probably a lot of like added sugar, fat, salt, and like anything that we eat at a restaurant is just, you know, not really the exact same as what we would make at home. And there's something about really connecting with yourself and connecting with food and the land where food comes from when you cook. And it's such a basic thing that I think culturally we've moved away from. So you're Italian. You grew up with this, like, probably, did you grow up with, like, cooking and, like, around you?
Oh, yeah. Still do.
Beautiful. And that's really rare, you know, in this day and age. A lot of people that don't come from a traditional family background in that sense, like, from, like, a traditional food culture, they're not so connected to that. And so I'm really thankful that my mom, like, every day would always cook a dinner and there was always, like, a big salad on the table. So observationally, as a young child, and I would even say this for parents, like any parents that are listening to the podcast, by you cooking, if you have young children, like even if you don't get them involved, they're watching and they're seeing and they're learning just through observation. And it's even just to know that, oh, part of our daily ritual, part of our daily life and our lifestyle is cooking and feeding ourselves. Mm-hmm. It sounds so obvious, but again, in this modern day, it's like super rare. That's what I've sort of experienced, like learning through clients. So for me, yeah. So I think at 15, I decided to eat more of a plant-based diet. It was a lot because of animal rights reasons and the environment, and these things that I really cared about. And so I thought, okay, what can I do as like, you know, this really passionate, like kind of like activist kid, you know? And I was like, well, I can sort of shift the way that I eat a little bit. And so I started to just dig into food and like cook my own dishes and slowly build up to that. And just like, that was a source of joy for me. And I would like come home from school and like have my meals all like my meal prep at like 15, like so into it. So that's kind of weird, but
was it just you? Like,
yeah, just me.
Was into this, or did you have friends that were also into this?
Yeah, it was
or?
Pretty much just me.
Okay.
Yeah. And there weren't a lot of people who knew what like the plant-based thing or the veggie veganism, like in Quebec, especially, that was pretty like rare mm-hmm. at the time. So yeah, I think I was really insecure about it, to be honest, at the time. I was like, oh, I'm like the weirdo that's like really into food.
It's like a secret.
Yeah, kind of. It just wasn't a huge part of my identity, which is fine. But then as I got more into sort of trying to just feed myself properly, because the parents were like, you know, well, okay, well, if you're feeding yourself, just make sure you're getting, you know what you're doing, you know? So I studied, like I would just get into books and start reading about nutrition. And then it just became really fascinating learning about the body. And I remember I could just kind of like really just read. And you know, that's always a sign of something that you're passionate about when you can kind of like dive in and then the time just kind of flies by. So, and I was just kind of thinking like, what am I going to do with my life? So I, you know, I was always really creative and loved doing like art centered stuff and dance and these kinds of things. But in terms of helping other people and kind of, I always was really passionate about working with people, helping people. I wanted to kind of have that be part of my work. So yeah, so holistic nutrition kind of like came out that way. Many years ago in my early 20s. Yeah.
Very, very cool. And you talk about like identity, obviously, like we talk to a lot of runners and I know you've done a bit of running as can you talk about your connection to running and,
sure.
and when that kind of developed too?
Yeah. The first time I ran, it's kind of a funny story because it was so irresponsible. A friend of mine was a runner and she's really inspiring because she wanted to run, but she was a smoker and it was super challenging. And so she started to run and then quit smoking because in order to help her with her running. So I was really inspired by that and she would run up the mountain. And so one day I was like, I want to come run with you.
It's like Mount Royal in Montreal. Yeah.
Thank you. Where yeah. I live really close to the mountain, which is beautiful and like a savior, a green area in the city. I was wearing like terrible sneakers and it was like a day in the summer and I ran the whole mountain with her and I couldn't believe that my body could actually do that. It was mind blowing and I just felt so great. And I, you know, like the runner's high was right there, you know, even though my body was like also in so much pain. Mm-hmm. So that was the first time. And then this was really, I don't know, I was probably, yeah, early 20s. And I ran for like I've ran for many, many years, like 5 days a week, like kind of running the mountain. And then I lived in like Thailand, I lived in Melbourne, I kind of moved around and everywhere I went, I would find my run spot and I would like always be outside, whether it was the winter or whatever the weather was. And it really helped me cope. And like, it was really therapy. So running has always been really therapeutic for me, but, I haven't actually run a lot in the last year and a half. It's been a kind of a pause for me and I've really respected that. I respected my body and like the fact that I kind of needed this time. And it's something that I see with clients as well, where there's times where certain things are shifting in our lives and, you know, we have to kind of adjust to that. And maybe we're feeling tired or we're feeling a bit burnt out or we're struggling a little bit. And I think just knowing your limits and knowing like, okay, I can go for a really nice long walk and I can go snowboarding and I can do some other activities that are like less intense, or some yoga. So I've been pretty active just in terms of doing other things, but yeah, running is not a huge part of my life right now, but I'm sure it'll come back.
For sure. Did you ever do any types of races, or you just literally did it recreationally? And
totally, yeah, recreationally. Races never called my name, although I have a huge respect, you know, for people who like yourself who take it, you know, professionally. Who've done it like kind of professionally.
I'm not no professional.
Well, I mean the hardcore races, and you know, I know you're going to Berlin, right?
I'm going to Berlin.
Berlin, yeah.
But
that's huge.
I wouldn't call myself a pro.
Okay, fine. To your pro in my eyes.
I'm working towards, you know, trying to become a better runner, but
awesome.
I appreciate the that point of view. And I think that's the challenge too, when people kind of see what you've done as a runner, kind of like categorize, we were talking about this a little bit before, how you know, performance categorizes you as a certain something within the sport. But it's fun to be recognized maybe as more than that, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. It's just fun. It's fun. And it made me feel strong. It makes me feel strong. It makes me feel connected to myself and to the outside, you know? So there's so much joy in that. Yeah. I just get into the zone, and there's whatever activity helps you get into that space, like mindset, I think is so wonderful.
And I think such a nice way, as you were traveling, I'm sure a nice way to see things as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, as you just said that, I'm just getting a visual of, I was in Nicaragua and I just was running along. There was this like island that I was on, and this like awesome, just like dirt road that was like weaving around this like crazy lake with like volcanoes and stuff. That was just a magical moment. I remember getting back from the run just feeling like so high on life. Yeah.
It's something else, you know. It's,
totally.
It's almost like music, I find. Yeah. Sometimes when you can associate a certain song to a memory that you have.
Yes.
I find, my coaches always tell me, like, there's something about every training run. Try and make something about it that you'll remember, you know.
Like a visualization or a song or...
just that made it special,
yeah,
you know,
and that's
it's a good trigger to kind of to have in your mind, so that it doesn't make it as so daunting. It makes it more fun and more enjoyable, because if you're doing it every day, whether it's for fun or whether it's to train for something, it can be a grind and can be tiring, you know. Like I was telling you now, like I've taken a step back, not because my love for running is gone, but just to take I need a rest.
Yeah.
You know,
I have so much respect for you to listen to that.
So, you know, like normally I'd be training for the Boston Marathon, but this year I decided not to. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to not have to train for something in the winter, because the winter can be, it's cold here in Montreal. It's
freezing.
And it's hard to put your shoes on and get outside.
Absolutely.
You know? But, yeah, having that like mental break and physical break definitely allows time for other things, and you could probably come back. I hope to come back even stronger.
Yes,
you know,
I think you do, and that's actually something that a lot of my clients will come with, because they say, I don't understand, like my energy is just really dropped, and I look at their training schedule and I look at their food, and you know, often it's like maybe you actually just need to rest more, and your body's just like, hey, dude. Like, we just need a little bit of a break or some balance now. And there's that fear of like, oh, I'm going to get out of shape, or I don't know, I'm going to lose my momentum. And I get it, you know, I get it. But finding other activities, you know, like that can keep you in shape. And from my experience personally, and then also with clients, I actually see that the gains are much bigger when you take that time, like amazingly, you know, and that there's that threshold where you can overdo the physical workouts, and then your body is just depleted. It's just working so hard to keep you going. And certainly there's adjustments you can make to your nutrition, but it's not always going to like fix that, you know? So I think it's finding that balance of like rest and workout, which shifts per season. If you live like us in places where there are like seasonal differences, and just, you know, seasons of our lives and like just different things like that. I think being flexible with ourselves and not like, you know, realizing we're humans and not machines, you know, is smart. So I really appreciate that, what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. I also like to get into, you know, what's your process like when it comes to food, and clearly you have a connection to running and the nutritional side of it.
Yeah.
So when you're meeting with clients, are you working mainly with athletes? Are you working mainly, like, what type of clientele do you take on, and what's the process like? Because as I understand it, you introduce them to plant-based cooking and integration into their everyday.
For some people who come for that, who are interested in doing that, it's not something that I advocate or push on anyone at all. Like, it's just something that a lot of people know me for because I have done a lot. I have sort of specialized in that in my life. But I really work with anyone and everyone, all kinds of eaters, essentially. So omnivores, anyone who wants to just nourish themselves better. And typically eating more plants is great for us. So it doesn't mean, again, going vegan or vegetarian or any of those more maybe extreme approaches. But it's like if people are accustomed to having like one or two servings of vegetables a day, it might be like, hey, let's get to five or six. And like, how do we do that? So being a cook as well and like working now as a private chef, I have over the years, like I kept a food blog and I did a lot of like hands-on food stuff. So I think for me, one of the approaches is to actually give people practical ideas of like, how do you eat better? Like in terms of what is your dinner going to look like? What's breakfast going to look like? People are like, what do I eat? I don't know what to eat. Like we were saying at the beginning, you know, what's a snack? And so whole food, like back to cooking as well, like really sticking to just basic whole foods and like kind of limiting the amounts of processed packaged foods, I think is a really good start. So I kind of help people with that. And sometimes people enter with very little experience with cooking. They're really intimidated in the kitchen and they haven't grown up around cooking. So a lot of the education, you know, as like a nutrition educator is actually around cooking. And that's kind of a more practical tool that helps a lot of people. But yeah, I work with people who are active, who are non-active, a lot, you know, both men and women, mostly women, you know, a lot of like mothers and people who are taking care of children who kind of recognize the importance of prioritizing their health and their nutrition. But, you know, men as well, a lot of people who have GI, gastrointestinal or digestive issues. That's also something that I specialized in part because I've had to kind of I went through that myself and I've learned about sort of what's helpful and what's not. And for a lot of people, animal products aren't the easiest to digest. So it's kind of one other reason that we might sort of shift towards a little bit more of a plant protein approach is just for their gut health. You know, and that's just like such an individual thing. But yeah, I think a lot of being a holistic practitioner, it kind of sets me apart, I think, because I really look at the whole picture of food and the whole person in terms of their lifestyle and not just focus on like how many calories you're consuming or like how much protein you're consuming, which are all important metrics. But, you know, kind of just trying to look at who is this person in front of me? What's their relationship with food and their bodies? You know, I used to use the word goal, like what are your goals? And I think it's a word that a lot of people in health use, and especially around training. And now I use the word intentions because it's like, what are your intentions? It's a little bit of a more gentle, softer way because it also broadens the question. So it's like, okay, sure. I I'd like to lose weight or I'd like to, get more energy. But I think, you know, less obvious benefits might arise that you didn't anticipate. Like, again, maybe your connection with your body or with food will adjust, will change, will become a little bit more, quote unquote, healthy or positive. And that to me is really powerful, you know, especially working with women and even men, you know, not to be sexist, because I think a lot of men struggle with their bodies as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's interesting to me. And I think also noticing the connection between the mind and the body. So people, you know, I think so many of us struggle with anxiety and there's depression and there's a lot of mental health stuff that's going on and that more and more of us are talking about, which I think is fantastic. And the way that we eat has a huge impact, you know, on our mood, and it could really support or hinder how we feel sort of mentally. And so I talk a little bit about that as well, if that's something that comes up in the person, and sort of seeing how we can support them in that way through nutrition. Yeah,
that's really, there's a lot there. It's so deep with when you think about it. And is that like the holistic part? Is that really what it is? It's like a more broad approach?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I would say like that's how I define it for myself. And then again, the holistic view of food too, like not just breaking it down into its like macronutrients and micronutrients, but sort of seeing about asking questions around like culture. You and I were just talking about this before, like, and as an Italian, it's really important that you have pasta in your life, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you grew up with that.
I can't live without pasta.
Well, totally. Yeah. I have a client now and we had this conversation the other day. And so, yeah, maybe white pasta is not nutritionally fantastic, right? Especially for certain people, if their goals are like weight loss or they have GI issues and maybe pasta is heavy for them, but it's a factor. So it's like, okay, we want to keep some pasta in your life because it's something that you really find comfort in and it has like meaning for you. So from a holistic point of view, I kind of take that into consideration, you know, of like, okay, that's something that let's talk about that. So, things like that I look at. And for a lot of people, they also, it might not be the primary reason that they're seeking nutritional support, but I think with climate change and with like the way that the earth is working or not working right now, people are really passionate about seeing what kind of steps that they can take in their day-to-day life. Not that it's like going to fix it, but it's just sort of saying, hey, how can I make an impact in my own day-to-day life? And we all eat every day, 3 times a day, at least, hopefully. Mm-hmm. We're all privileged to have access to so much food. And so we have choices every time we eat. And so not to, you know, preach, but I just think, yeah, it's really cool. I love to see when people are thinking a little bit broader in that respect as well, saying like, hey, you know what, if I'm going to eat in a way that supports my health and it also supports the earth, that's a double whammy. Like, that's pretty sweet. So like, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. Where did you gain all this education? Is there a school to become a holistic
nutrition
there's a practitioner?
There's a couple of schools.
Like, did they teach you at Concordia? Or?
They didn't. I wish. It's actually hard to find like the more holistic approach in conventional education, which is why I had to go like the alternative route. But the first school I studied at is at Bowman College, which is California based. Okay. And they're hella holistic, like really out there. A lot of the stuff, I was just like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. But that was really interesting, and especially around the client dynamic and like compassionate listening, active listening, these kinds of things were talked about, which is really cool, I think, in terms of like quote unquote bedside manner, working with people around health, where it's such a personal thing, talking about food. Mm-hmm. And then I studied at the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition, and that's a Canadian like sort of nationwide school. And that's it's a program in, to become a registered holistic nutrition practitioner. So in Quebec, we have very strict, interesting rules around sort of complementary medicine practitioners. So I have to use the term holistic nutrition practitioner, but if it was in Ontario, it would be nutritionist. So terms of people are confused about the term, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I got that early on. And I've never heard this term before, but yeah. I'm happy, you know, you used the proper...
Yeah, it's important.
...proper term in Quebec.
Yeah.
But I found, like, I just going back to even when I made the switch...
Yeah.
...taking away meat, I automatically boosted my greens, right?
Cool.
So
that's
I'm awesome. Eating, like, more, like, I put spinach and kale in my shakes. That was my way of saying, like, okay, I don't want to be deficient in iron, I think... You know, there's a lot of things that we got to be careful of when we're making the switch, because it can affect us the other way.
Sure.
I don't want to say negative or bad way.
Thank you. You're so quick.
The other way, because, you know, you have to be careful.
Absolutely.
So what are some of those, you know, a lot of the questions you get from people is like, the first one is always like, where do you get your protein?
For sure. Well, I would say one thing about the greens that just came to mind that I'd love to just give a quick like tidbit for you and for anyone is with spinach, it's actually best to have it lightly cooked versus the raw. The iron, like you're talking about, and the magnesium kind of is like more bioavailable when you lightly cook it. So I appreciate that it's like easier to get your greens when you're just shoving into a smoothie and it's a great first step, you know, but just being conscious of like cooking some of these greens too and integrating like other sources of plant protein, like the legumes, you know, getting some black beans in there, some quinoa, some farro. Do you know farro?
No.
It's Italian. You should know. It's like the original farro.
Yeah. Okay. I think I got it. Yeah,
it's like the original wheat before it was highly processed. It's one variety of wheat, the grass, the grain, and high protein, and buckwheat groats, which are wonderful. So these are like the quote unquote pseudo cereals. So if you're used to eating a lot of rice and pasta and bread, if you want to integrate more plant sources of protein, going for some of those pseudo cereals is really helpful. And then really basic, you know, the beans, the lentils, some organic or like, you know, high quality soy from some tempeh or some tofu once, you know, a couple times a week. People are really scared of soy and there's a lot of misunderstandings or misinformation around that.
Can you share that? Some information?
Yeah. So from my experience, but from the research I've done, there's no danger in having some soy. I think a lot of the packaged processed foods that are out on the market have a lot of processed soy isolates and these sort of poor quality soy products that a lot of people are over consuming and maybe getting sensitive to. And that's certainly not a positive thing, all the more reason to sort of stick to the whole food sources. But yeah, from a lot of the research, there's no actual sign of like it causing cancer or it being like a huge problem. Certainly some people are sensitive to it and it's best to avoid it. But as a plant-based eater, it's hard enough to get enough protein. So if you're cutting out all soy altogether, it can be hard because it is sort of a high quality source of protein. Mm. Yeah. And then, the nuts and the seeds, like I'm a huge lover of the hemp seeds.
so good,
right? Sprinkling that on stuff.
Chia,
sure. The almonds, cashews, walnuts, all those guys. Mm-hmm. Having some of those in your diet as well. Yeah.
And there's also like the B12s and iron and all that stuff. Do you suggest supplements when you're...
That's not part of my scope of practice.
Okay.
But that's why the plant-based, like that's why I advocate plant-based versus vegan, actually, because a lot of the people I work with do have some animal products in their diet. And I think it just, especially if you're highly active, or if you're a runner, if you're like, training, like I have a few people who are like doing some pretty intensive training, it's realistically, and I know maybe some people are going to be bummed about this, it's really hard to actually get sufficient amounts of protein and all the nutrients you need on a daily basis. For some people physically it works, and for other people, from my observation, it doesn't work the best for them. So they do integrate some fish or some Greek yogurt and really what I help people do is really source as best as they can. So getting, like a local organic farm made, yogurt, something like that. So I think that's important. And for a lot of people that works well, and for others, I just respect where people are at. And I think we all have the power and the choice to eat in a way that resonates with us. But especially if you're not cooking, it can be super challenging. So it's a process for a lot of people to figure out what that's going to look like in terms of how much plants are going to be part of their diet. And yeah.
So if for myself, like I'm not closed-minded by any means. I'm not ever going to say like I'm never going to eat meat again or whatever. Yeah. Like if you listen to Joe Rogan, he swears by, the elk that he hunts.
Right.
It's
yeah.
like the purest meat that you can get, the leanest, the highest protein, all this stuff.
Yeah.
How much do you think is sufficient? Like if you wanted to have like a mainly plant-based diet,
right?
How much, let's say animal product produce do you think is sufficient?
It's so individual.
Okay.
It's so, and again, some people don't tolerate animal products at all. It's like I'm certainly not going to tell them to eat animal products if they don't tolerate it. This is where there's no one word answer, and every single body and person is different. And so I help people to navigate that and to support them in that process of figuring out, hey, what works best for me and my body at this time as well. Like you said, at this moment, this is where you're eating and this is what's working for you. But if at any point it stops working for you, that's a problem. So we have to just be flexible and make some adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ideally, we want to find a balance where your body's happy and your mind is happy in the sense that you feel good about what you're eating. I think that's so important. We want to feel good about our choices, and I think it's key to kind of realize that we're always changing, and that again, even the seasons, like in the winter, if you're eating a lot of like raw cold food, your body might just be like struggling and just like craving. If you're starting to crave a lot of sugars, that's usually because you're kind of low in protein. That's often what happens, that's like an observation that I've made. And so a lot of people come and they're like, I'm just so addicted to sugar. And so we have to look at like where the minerals are at, where the, proteins at, their fats are at in terms of how much they're consuming. And so playing around with that and keeping a journal. So keeping a diet diary is something that I work with a huge amount. And it's not just like, it's not like counting calories. It's really just tuning in and a prompt every day before and after you eat, ideally, to check in, like, how do I feel? Do I feel tired after I eat? Well, that's, you're meant to feel like kind of a little bit more boosted and energized and satiated and mm-hmm. satisfied. And so just, again, given the fact that we're all different, I think it's a really helpful tool to just to tune in and develop more of a mindful eating experience. Mm-hmm. Is when you start to write things down and just get curious, like, hey, what works best for me? Like, what are the foods, rather than coming at it from a cerebral place or being like, how can I fit into this box? Excuse me. How do I fit into this diet, or how do I adapt to this diet? It's like, how do I adapt food to me? Like I am the priority, and my body is the priority. And then like, kind of working from within and kind of working from how you feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And you were talking about gut.
Yeah.
Gut health. Like, how do you train your gut? Is there a way you can do that? Like, I want to get maybe more into the athletes that you've trained and maybe, you know, what they do in terms of, you know, pre-workout or pre-race.
What do you mean by training the gut?
Well, I know, like, for when I was doing Ironman, for example, for an Ironman, it's like a full day, right? It's like
so intense.
It's a long day.
Yeah, yeah.
So in both situations, I had some gastro issues.
Mm.
Both developed on the bike. My nutrition was mostly liquid nutrition. And then when I got to the run, one race, I was okay. And then the other race, I was like, couldn't move. I couldn't take anything in. So,
no.
But you hear this term thrown around a lot with endurance athletes, how to train your gut to be able to digest foods or digest nutrition during long periods of activity.
Yeah. Well, there's two things. I mean, the first thing is really to start this earlier on and to sort of get your body accustomed and like used to eating in a certain way and having real consistency around that. It's like months before. And just generally, I think a lot of people eat typically like the work week is great and they have their routine. And then the weekend is like everything goes to to shit, you know, sort of, or it's just like completely off. And then their body's like, what's going on? Yeah. I need some consistency. So that's one piece. And eating smaller meals often, like refueling often, but not overloading your gut by eating a lot at one time can be really helpful. Some people try and like pound down like a lot of oatmeal or like a huge amount of smoothie or something like that. And so I kind of say like just smaller meals so that again, you're kind of optimizing your energy, but you're not overloading your gut. Like I make a lot of these like sort of like homemade energy bars and balls that are like, you know, the nuts, the figs, or like the dates, you know, peanut butter, that kind of stuff. So just like good, like nutrient dense food that you just kind of like can put into your bag or into your side, you know, your pocket and just be popping those. So I have one triathlete client who we would just have so much fun making different combos of those little balls and like finding the right right timing. So each person needs their own timing. If you're doing like a full day training, like just knowing, okay, I need to have this many, you know, these little bars or balls like at the beginning and then kind of like pace myself so that your gut is feeling well. And then, you know, you're sort of drinking in between. And it's such, again, you need that journal and just be like noticing for you what works best, what doesn't. Like going from there, I think just, again, there's no black or white or like one rule answer. So it's really figuring out, what's the best sort of like, combo for you.
Yeah, for sure. It's a science in its own right.
Sure.
In triathlon, they call it the fourth sport. It's that.
I love that.
That in depth. Do you also train people or coach people with their diet who are coming back from injuries? And do you use diets or different foods to remedy different issues that they might be having, such as maybe like inflammatory?
Good question. Yeah, so I actually haven't had experience with that per se with athletes, but certainly people who've just come having had like a lot of health issues and they're sort of at that final point of being like, okay, I'm going to do the harder step of changing my nutrition. You know, it's like not the most fun to kind of have to do that for a lot of people if they don't have to. The anti-inflammatory approach, basically all the whole plant foods are typically supportive and they're not inflammatory for, you know, in terms of on that level, finding, you know, more cooked foods versus raw, often more easier to digest as well. So, you know, soups and like these kinds of things can be really supportive. And then the colors, you know, all the colors are indicative of these nutrients, the vitamins, you know, and so getting the beets and the greens and all kinds of like variety, diversity as well. Like I always say like all these different whole foods, these plant foods have a different spectrum of nutrients. And so, yeah, really just diversifying. So it's not the same like chickpeas and celery every day, but you're kind of mixing it up can be really helpful. And and again, I think over the years, it's been really an interesting learning experience to realize how much I have to learn from each person that I work with and how much they teach me. And that it's so collaborative because I'm less and less sort of inclined to impose any ideas and just more experiment and be curious about, you know, we try things step by step and I really take a slow and steady, you know, step by step approach. And I tell people it's like a 3-month process. Just give yourself at least 3 months to be integrating these different habits and trying different foods, different recipes, because it's a lot. It's a lot for a lot of people to make these changes. Mm-hmm. And so in order to not allow it or not to be stressful, a stressful process, but to hopefully, it, you know, allow it to be fun and enjoyable, it's really important to go slow. So just taking notes and again, developing that real mindfulness. I have a client right now who's just blowing my mind because he's totally embraced this process of like checking in every time he eats. He goes to eat out and then he's like, oh man, I really, you know, I just don't feel good after. I feel like taking a nap. And then, you know, I have this big veggie soup and this like avocado toast and I feel fantastic, you know? It's just so motivating. Like if you know, I don't have to say anything. It's mm-hmm. like the person keeps themselves in check. And so, yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of, that's the process.
What are some of the steps you go through with somebody who really isn't really good around the kitchen? Like you yeah. mentioned earlier about like family and cooking and all these things I maybe took for granted. Now looking back, it's kind of like what brings a family together.
Absolutely.
Is the mealtime
yeah.
and kind of everything goes into it. And I can't say I was a really helpful kid in the kitchen, but just like there's something about walking into my mom's, like my parents' house and like smelling the food when I walk in the door, and it just puts you in a good mood and
yeah, food memories. I love it.
So
totally,
you know, people like to eat the food. They don't know how to cook the food yeah. a lot of the time. So yeah. how do you, because it's so habitual.
Sure.
Like I'm thinking about how I would suggest to a beginner runner how to start running.
I start with a smoothie. I start with the most basic recipes mm-hmm. and then we go step by step. And it's just, okay, like getting out of your comfort zone and like getting your hands dirty and just like slowly like buying a new food that I've never bought hemp seeds or like I've never had, I don't know what, like Swiss chard. Like some of these foods are so funky for people. They're just like, I've never heard of this. I've never had tofu or like, I think tofu is disgusting. And so like I give them recipe ideas. And so we build over time, like one new recipe a week, like real steps, you know? And so then the repertoire really grows after that 3-month process. It's like, wow, I make a sick tahini dressing now that I like love to have on my salad, you know, mm-hmm. and things like that. So it's very empowering when people feel like I know how to make food that I love. And so for me, it's such a passion. Like I love cooking, I love eating. So it's easy to kind of coach people in that regard. And I just see, you know, I encourage them to give me the feedback. Like if you're feeling intimidated by this, let's just take a stop and let's take a pause and we'll like go to something so basic. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's like a stir fry or just like roasting a bunch of vegetables in the oven with some olive oil, salt, pepper, like something that's just, okay, let's just get that down. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge thing, you know, to be able to make vegetables taste good is a huge achievement for a lot of people, or just like a basic lentil soup or like a sick hummus, you know? So getting the food processor, getting the blender, like step by step, just starting to build up and go at the pace that feels good and exciting for you. And of course, before cooking comes food shopping. So a lot of the time people are just like, I have no food in the house, or how do I get organized? So the organization is a huge part, and just starting to prioritize food in your life means cooking, shopping more often, and like, you know, getting, hopefully finding joy in that. Like I love grocery shopping so mm-hmm. much.
What do you think, fun. What do you think of the argument that it's expensive?
Yeah. Well, if you think about lentils and beans and yeah. like broccoli, it's really not. Mm-hmm. It's expensive when you're not cooking from raw whole ingredients. And you're trying to buy, like you're buying like a package processed, like vegan branded, whatever, mock meats and stuff. And then also restaurant food, certainly. But that is a bit of a myth. I would say that we are privileged for those of us who have access to fresh food and who have access to a lot of these kinds of grocery stores. I know that a lot of parts of the city and a lot of people who live in other cities maybe don't have that kind of access, which is really upsetting and unfortunate. So yeah, I think if we do have that access and we do have the ability to purchase that kind of food, for example, the big supermarkets like the IGA and the Metro, the Provigo, often the produce there is pretty expensive. And not always the best quality from my experience. I don't know if you relate to that, but mm-hmm. going to the more independent, smaller grocery stores, like the tiny little fruiteries. And for me, I live near PA, so like the PA supermarket. So doing a bit of research before and finding places where the produce is cheaper is really helpful if you're on a budget, and also scoping out the like flyers. Like I still do that all the time. I'm always like, what's on sale? Okay, I'm going to make something with cauliflower. I'm going to make something with, you know, kidney beans.
So it's the sale of the week.
Totally. And so there it's, I think it's really about the priority and just sort of saying, okay, if food is a priority, I have to take the time and energy that I would with anything else and research and like take the time to go to that one shop. And yeah, you know, if it's a drag and if it's like, ugh, it's probably not sustainable. But if it's something that you're really excited to embrace, my goal and what I help people do, I think, is just really actually find enjoyment in the whole process. And so getting excited about it, you know, and that's what I hope. That's just what I want people to have, an enjoyable experience, and not being healthy, not be something that's just like, or eating healthily, not be something that's just a bummer.
Yeah. Cause it can be daunting.
For sure.
I can say that I'm definitely not the best, plant-based, cook, or, you know, I'm grateful for my girlfriend who like loves to cook, and she makes all these delicious meals. And I'm like, okay, I make something, like, how do I make it like that good? So like as a sequel to this podcast, we should do a cooking show.
Yeah. But you know what? It doesn't have to be a whole thing. Like I'm really about simple, back to Italian influence, like keeping it super simple, you know, like just like sauteing some rapini or like, you know, but as long as it tastes good to you, it's good. It doesn't have to be elaborate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's really lovely that you and your girlfriend can do that together. Yeah. It's really important.
So is there Italian, where's the Italian come from?
No, I don't know. Okay. I just have a huge respect for Italians. I'm a Jew. I have the Jewish background.
The passion for cooking.
Yeah. I love it. The nonnas.
That's awesome. You were talking about like a myth, you know, myths.
Sure.
Is there some other myths that you can talk about, or
one of the ones that's like topical is the, which I think I've mentioned before, people know me that I talk about this, is the coconut oil trend. Do you cook with coconut oil?
I have coconut oil. I
cook with olive oil though.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. You better. Yeah. Italian.
Sometimes if it calls for it, I use coconut oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, once in a while, it's fine. Yeah. But it's like a huge trend, right? It's like a lot of people have kind of gone for it. So
coconut water, coconut oil,
sure,
and coconut.
Sure. Yeah. Which, you know, it's fine, coconut water and these things. But no, just in terms of as a healthy fat, like you're kind of better off having the like olive oil and some of the other oils. It's pretty like high saturated fat. It's just, you know, one of the trends that I'm not a huge advocate of, but I know there's like a lot of arguments around it. But just from the research I've kind of done in the last few months, or last year, I should say, it's a bit of a myth from my perspective that it's like the thing.
When you talk about research, what are you referring to? Is it just testing or is...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, like studies. Okay. Studies and like different health reports that I'll read and different like educational bodies, like universities and their studies that they do in terms of the nutrition. I try and keep up to date as much as I can.
Right.
With that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm. Any others?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't really. No.
We went over like protein and some other, what about like vitamins and supplements? Anything there?
I said, I kind of just focus on getting the nutrients from the whole foods.
Gotcha.
And I know like a lot of dietitians and like other specialists, will focus on the supplements. I always say like supplement the diet, you know, and sort of, I think like just focusing on the diet and the nutritional, guidelines and kind of getting into the basics is where I focus on. And then, you know, if people have blood work done and their physician says like, you need iron, like certainly, you know, I'm there to support whatever the physician is saying, but it's not really within the scope to focus on supplements. Not really my approach. Yeah.
What about the outcomes of some of your clients? Is there any ones that stand out? I'm sure you've worked with a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always, there's so much gratification in working with young women and men, where there's this unexpected shift in their relationship with themselves and with life, you know, like that it starts with food and then, they just start to feel more connected with themselves, more empowered, more confident. And that just stems into all kinds of positive things. When there's a lot of like straight up suffering, when people are really, a lot of women, young women, anyone who's listening probably can relate at some point in their life with like just poor body image and like struggling with that. It's not all about nutrition. Certainly it's a little bit more complicated, but when people can develop a positive relationship with their body through food and through sort of cooking and just focusing on that as one tool to doing that. It's so wonderful, you know, just to feel good in your skin, to feel good in your body is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And not everyone voices that, but I'm sure at a certain point we've all kind of felt that way.
Totally.
And have you ever felt like that?
And absolutely.
Does it allow you to really relate to the people you're working with?
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. There's so much empathy and compassion that comes because of that experience. And I'm grateful to food because it's, you know, and my journey, because it's sort of helped me to kind of connect with my body in a more positive way. And it's a daily process. We're all human. We all have days where we don't feel so great about our bodies or we don't feel so great about ourselves. And I think it can be a really positive way to kind of build that relationship with ourselves is the way that we nourish ourselves. And I use the word nourishment in a really, I love that word. I love the word, and I think of it in a broader, more holistic way, in the sense that we nourish ourselves in so many different ways, right? Like it could be through running, it could be through like our social interactions, through our work, through our creative expression, different ways that we are nourished every day by being outside, whatever it is that makes us feel nourished. And food is one aspect of that. But I think it really leads back to the mind-body thing, to our mood and to our mental health and to feeling good and to feeling, you know, finding joy. And these things are so important as well. So yeah, food is just one piece of it. You know, I don't think it's like the solution, you know, but it's something that we can find pleasure in, hopefully, and enjoy the process of feeding ourselves, which is such a human, basic human thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you are running, or like when you run, how do you fuel yourself in preparation for going out for a run, when you come back from a run?
Sure. I'm someone that I need to eat at least an hour before. Like like for me in the morning, like I'll have to give myself like that hour, for sure, just to digest before I'll go out. But even like, you know, starches, like this is something that a lot of like hardcore runners in like Mexico, and they'll eat like root vegetables, you know, like potatoes and these kinds of like sugar starch rich or like carbohydrate rich veg. I'm all about that. Like in the winter, I'll do roasted butternut squash with some like walnuts and like, you know, some whatever, a little bit of maple syrup. Like I love that, you know? And then post-workout, definitely within an hour, always a more protein-rich meal, whether it's some buckwheat, some quinoa, like more veg usually, or maybe I've like made a soup and I have some like lentil soup and, you know, like with some like whole wheat bread or something like that. Like it's kind of simple in the sense of like, you know, more protein post-workout, carbohydrate before. But I always eat before and after a run. I never go on an empty stomach, that's for sure. And I hydrate a lot. Like I'm always hydrating like first thing that I wake up, and then always throughout the day. I think that's really important for me. Yeah.
Well, I think it's important for a lot of people. And I know for sure I don't drink enough.
Yeah. And we take a sip of water. Yeah. Both of us. Cheers.
I
2 liters.
Yeah, I don't drink enough. I just don't.
Dude.
I mean, it's such a huge, huge thing. How long does it take to recognize the benefits of like hydration? Like,
pretty
if
quickly.
I,
yeah,
you think so?
Another thing is like the pee test. You know, the pee test, like the color.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good way to sort of be monitoring throughout the day. Like, wow, I need to drink more water. I'm just looking at your cup, which is a lovely looking cup. But if you have a 1 liter water bottle that you carry around everywhere, you keep it on your desk when you're at work, you know, when you go out, and you pace yourself as, you know, throughout the day, this becomes a habit for you that you, by midday, you've kind of finished 1 liter, you fill it up again, and then you have the second liter, you know, toward dinner, something like that. And then you can even set a timer on your phone and it take that pause to just like, check in with yourself, take a breath, drink some water. Like it could be a little bit of like a pause, like a distress pause, you know? Mm-hmm. And then people often complain like, oh, I have to pee all the time and like drinking all the time. I'm like, it's great. You get up, you move your body.
That's
you're
true.
Detoxing your kidneys, you know, you're like getting things out of your body.
Yeah.
But certainly, yeah, water is pretty key as human beings who are made up of a lot of water.
Yeah. Yeah. And what there's water, there's nutrition, there's movement.
Yeah.
You said. So like when we have like our work days and stuff, like, Do you go as far as all that in your approach with people?
Yeah, we touch on. I mean, again, each person in terms of their level of personal readiness around these conversations. Like, you know, I go where I follow the person, like you in this conversation, where you kind of, you know, we're meeting each other where we're at.
Yeah.
So I kind of do that with clients as well. But yeah, I always talk about hydration, absolutely, and the nutrition, and also stress levels, because if you're thinking about something like gut health, you know, and I'm not a therapist, and we don't go too deep into these things, but
yeah,
if you're thinking about something like gut health, a lot of the time we're tense, we feel stressed, we feel tired, we feel fatigued because of high stress levels, which our culture certainly is experiencing, you know? And so we look at that as well and sort of see, hey, do you get really poor cramps, or do you have like a lot of GI issues or like acid reflux when you're at work, but then not on the weekend when you're sort of relaxed and chill? Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe it's not fully about the food. So it's just questions to get curious about and sort of like ask ourselves, because we're not immune to quote unquote stress, you know, and that comes in all kinds of different forms. Yeah, I don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, because I'm just trying to think of all that.
Yeah,
all that goes into it, because I think a lot of the time, you know, especially when you're training for like I'm just like relating it to myself,
yeah,
or people that might be listening. They're training for something. They don't always feel the best now in their day, but there's so much that goes into it. Like, you know, maybe they have a tempo to do or speed work or just an easy run and they don't feel like doing it,
yeah,
for some reason on this day. But I think it's important for people to look at the whole.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, am I drinking enough water? Did I eat? Have I been eating?
100%.
Have I been sleeping?
And even if you're not a runner, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're just another person, I mean, I know your audience is runners, but like, let's say it's not even around a run, it's just as our basic, like basic, yeah, human needs.
Yeah.
If you're not feeling optimal, if you're not feeling great, it's like asking yourself those questions and starting from that point.
Well, to that point, I think in a time where I'm, you know, my mileage gets up to like maybe 100K a week.
Wow.
during marathon training, maybe more.
Okay.
Now it's gone to, since November, I've been doing, you know, 30, 40, 50.
Yeah.
So like half the distance.
Sure.
Is my energy level up? No.
Hmm.
So what's happening?
Yeah.
That's kind of like where my questions are coming from, because I'm kind of curious about my own self. It's like, I'm more in tune than ever. I'm getting more sleep.
Awesome.
I'm training half the amount.
Right.
But maybe there's some of the other things, you know, I'm stressed about certain things. So
yeah. Huge factor.
It plays a big part in it.
And, yeah.
Even it, you know, even if you're getting enough sleep, it can become difficult.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And thank you for bringing up sleep, because sleep is another massive factor for our health and well-being. Mm-hmm. And all the more reason when you're checking that list off and you're saying, for example, I'm eating consistent 3 balanced meals a day. I'm sleeping for 8 hours a day. I'm hydrating sufficiently. Let's say you really say like, I'm doing all those things and I'm really tired and I'm moving, you know, I'm like doing at least 30 to 60 minutes of like kind of like some cardio, like 3 or 4 days a week. Then there's other things. Yeah. There's other things that might be going on. And it's like, I'm not here to diagnose. I'm not here to tell anyone, you know, what it is, but within ourselves, like asking ourselves that question.
Mm-hmm.
And then being curious about that, and whether it's journal writing and just writing, identifying what are your stresses? What are our stresses? There's so much going on, even in the world, like on a global level, you know, not to get all out there, but there's a lot going on in the world that I think a lot of us are affected by, like consciously or unconsciously. So, and then within our own personal lives, you know, it's not easy to be a human being.
Yeah. Do you pay attention to all that stuff going on? Because I know you have traveled and live in other places. And how much of that is part of your everyday? And
it's a good question. I had to learn how to moderate the amount of sort of news and information I take in, because I'm as a sensitive person, I could definitely become overwhelmed by that, and I have in the past. So I try and just keep in touch, be aware of like the bigger picture and like what's going on outside of my own life. But that's part of my self-care practice, is not overdoing the exposure to things that are really upsetting, that we don't always have, you know, if I don't have control over something, it's like, it can become gratuitous to just like be like diving deep into it. But for me, it makes me feel connected to the world and to other people. And it also actually helps to minimize my problems when I kind of am more aware of what's happening out in the world and like the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're, like, I'm sure you're dealing with, you know, you have that, and then the people you're dealing with too, not the problems, but I'm, you know, you become a psychologist too at certain points, I'm sure. And then plus you have to deal with your own stuff, it becomes a lot of like of emotional stuff that you have to carry.
Yeah. And a lot of my daily practices are in working through that with that and seeing how I can be of best service. So not sort of, I definitely have struggled with burnout in the past, and I've learned a lot through that process. And I think working in health, especially like, holistic health, people think that you're just like this, like perfect, always healthy person. And it's just like, no, I'm a human being and I struggle and I like lose my boundaries with myself and I overwork and then I have to just keep coming back and, taking my meditation in the morning time and my yoga and breathing. Breathing is another thing that I think of it as like water, like just, we forget to breathe and take like belly breaths and really get oxygen all the way through our bodies. And I think athletes are fantastic in the sense that they often really have to focus on breath. If you're training, breathing and like getting enough oxygen is key. So I think about, even pairing the habit of like drinking water and then check in with the breath and like take a full breath. It can really just help sort of release some of the stress that we take on every day in these moments. Yeah.
Yes. And I find too, a lot of times during the day, I just exhale.
Yeah, a long exhale, a big sigh.
It's like I've been holding it for the last. Do you often like talk to your athletes about, cross training and maybe doing like yoga or?
I leave that to their trainers. Okay. I really keep to my, I try and keep to my, what I know, which is a nutrition thing, but it's a wonderful question. I think I encourage people to listen to their bodies always and to keep checking in and to do things that they find fun, mm-hmm. So whatever that is.
How did you switch up things with running? Like where as you were running, did you also do other things that maybe complemented it or?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I've always loved walking. Like I go for like long walks. I still like love walking the mountain and it seems like, I think we underestimate walking or we think of it as like, just walking, but walking is fantastic. It's really, I think our bodies are meant to move and walk. And we still get the benefits of being outside, breathing fresh air and just like moving the body. So I go for a lot of walks, long walks. Winter, love snowboarding so much.
Oh, nice.
So much. I haven't gone that much, but I do. It's so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I do morning yoga every day at work at home, which is also where I work. Which is a super, super simple practice. I'm not a yogi by any means, but it's just a way of like getting out of the mind and into the body and stretching and just... Yeah, building some strength, a bunch of planks, a bunch of planking.
It's great. I'll be honest here. I haven't been in a while, but I was going at a certain point at least once a week.
Nice.
I even attempted the yoga challenge in November a few times.
Yeah, cool.
But I never felt, I felt so good when I was in there.
Yeah.
Because I just, there was, other than running, there was no other place I could go where I could just like, leave my body.
Yeah, totally.
And you're just like
leave the
so
mind.
Focused.
Yeah.
And I did hot yoga too. So you're like trying to deal with the heat and stuff. But
yeah,
but it's, I got to get back. I keep saying I got to, my girlfriend, if she listens to it, she'll give me shit. But
it's
I've been
hard
saying
to
I
maintain.
Get,
it's okay.
Yeah.
I started to go back to dance. Like I love like hip hop dance, like dance hall, all these like fun forms of dance.
Yeah.
And I went back and I was like, okay, finally I went back after saying for so long that I would, and I haven't been so consistent with it. So we all struggle with like, with maintaining all of these things that we want to do or should quote unquote should do. But I think meditating on that feeling when we're in whatever we're doing, whether it's yoga or whatever the practice is, and just being like, this feels so good for my body. The more that we do that, I think the more motivated we are to keep choosing that thing,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think journaling is one of those things too.
Do you journal?
I don't, but
have you done in the past?
I want to.
Cool.
I've done it on vacation.
Nice. Sometimes. Yeah.
To just like document my trips and
cool.
Just because you do so much in a day and the days just fly by and
you're, so true.
You're always looking ahead at what you're going to do next kind of thing. But it's, I just found my journal I went to Thailand to must have been 3-4 years ago now.
Okay, cool.
But I journaled like the first 3 days, but it's just hilarious to kind of look back. But I've heard from runners too that journaling their workouts and similarly what goes into that is like how much did you sleep, how much did you eat, kind of to see how in tune you are with your own body.
Absolutely.
And to see kind of in training you see like where the performance peaks at a certain point in the plan before your race and how that all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like one of my guests said, that you start to see patterns.
That's the word. It's patterns through journal writing. That's the goal.
Which is really interesting.
So interesting.
Yeah.
It's this experiment on yourself. And that's why, like, being consistent, whether it's whatever is realistic to maintain. So, you know, ideally it would be once a day that you're writing things down. But some people kind of really go for it and they're like, they keep it by their desk and they're like constantly just jotting down little notes. And back to stress level two, like having a scale between 1 and 10, 1 being low stress, 10 being high, is an interesting thing to just be monitoring throughout the day as well. And just to sort of like in conjunction with your energy levels and seeing how much that's affecting you, in as well as the food, hydration, movement factors. It's something that has really helped me. And also just getting things off the mind onto the paper in itself reduces our stress, takes things less energy in the brain and more energy free up for other things. Mm-hmm. So just writing in that, and writing by hand, it doesn't have to be. A lot of my clients are like, I'm sorry, I'm using an app, I'm using my iCal or whatever it is. And I'm like, that's cool, like do whatever works for you. But there is something too about writing by hand, and even just in a Google Doc, whatever it is, just taking the time for yourself to check in with your body, check in with your mind, check in with yourself. Mm-hmm. We just don't do that a lot. Yeah. There's no space for just a quiet like space, you know.
There's no time, quote unquote, time for it.
Yeah, but yeah. We have to schedule it.
For, you know, take half an hour away from your phone.
I was going to say, totally.
You know, I think if we all look at our phone consumption, it's just like way too high for everybody.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, there is a few minutes in the day to get off the Instagram and maybe write something down on paper.
Yeah.
I just had just one more question.
Sure.
What's your take on intermittent fasting? Do you know anything about that?
And
because I just recently listened to I'm getting more and more into these podcasts, but like a ritual podcast, and he was talking to a doctor about it was anti-aging and how to reverse the signs, and fasting was a big part, was one of the components that they did mention, and I'm just curious on it because it does make sense. It's the way they were talking about it was, you know, the conversation all started with like you have to change your body, like you have to trick your body, because we get into these, you know, we're so habitual and everything's the same. We eat at the same times, maybe eat the same foods.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about it, but it's kind of true. So,
I mean, the shorter answer is always, it really depends on the individual in terms of whether it's appropriate or not for them. Mm-hmm. I think, I have been like surveying people actually recently about intermittent fasting. Some people say it's really helpful for them. It's been really positive. It gives them more energy. Other people feel like hangry and they notice that they'll actually like binge eat whenever there's like these like large gaps of time where their blood sugar drops, and you know, it just doesn't really work well for them. I'm actually one of those people. And so a lot of the science behind it is really interesting, and I think for the short term, for a lot of people it is helpful for sort of if you have a disease or if you have some kind of condition, certain conditions I should say, from what I understand. But yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily for everyone. And I think it's finding ways of just eating times is just as personal and individual as like the food that we're eating. So a lot of people, for example, they're like, I can't eat breakfast in the morning. And then we always hear like, it's really important to eat breakfast first thing in the morning. So things like that to like just be curious about again. Mm-hmm. I think it really is about listening to what works best for us. And so if it means that like, you know, you're able to go, you know, for like most of the day without eating food. I mean, to me, the metabolism, the idea of eating more frequent meals is typically how I function and what I suggest for people. So smaller meals, but just eating often enough where you're not starving and then tend to like overeat or eat a lot. You know, or sorry, eat really quickly and eat foods that are maybe more of a stimulant, like more higher carbohydrate foods, because you're just like, your blood sugars drop that far. So it so depends on the person, their activity level, their physical health. You know, if you're pregnant, like, might be not a good idea to do intermittent. You know, there's a lot of factors.
Baby's gotta eat.
Yeah, you know, yeah. So it's not a one word answer, and I just think it's a really interesting thing. I'm really interested to learn more about it, and so I've been really welcoming people's stories. I've been like, I asked on Facebook, like, tell me about your experience with intermittent fasting, and yeah, it's really cool. So it's interesting. I'm always open to learning about these things, but for me, it doesn't really work.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
I'm definitely gonna dig more into it because I'm
cool.
Curious about.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the aging process, you know, and I never. I mean, we always. I mean, I guess we just assume that you're gonna live till people live till they're 70, 80, 90, some,
right.
some rare cases where they live to 100, but
right.
You know, what if you could live till 110 and live healthy? And I don't know, is it possible? And so I don't know. It's opened me up to these kind of ideas
cool.
of how can I better care for my body? And
yeah.
what are some maybe everyday practices? Like they were talking about hot and cold and all this stuff. And
these things. Whatever motivates you. I mean, yeah, I just think about living day to day. I really live a day to day life and I just kind of want to live a good quality life while I'm here. I'm not trying to live forever personally.
It's a long
that's
time.
Me, you know? Yeah. I like however long I live, I just try and appreciate the days that I have and live, you know, like fully live. So, do what we can to take care of ourselves and enjoy the process.
Yeah.
Love it. Like have fun, you know, I'm just like, it's weird. I think I was more of a serious kid potentially. And then like, as I've gotten older, I just have this greater appreciation for fun and enjoyment and just small things, little things and social time, like having positive relationships. I mean, talk about health. The social aspect I think is super key too. Having like really supportive people, positive people in your life is a huge source of nourishment. So I'm really thankful to have some really positive peeps around me these days. Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. You said nourishment there. Like the people are also, they're nourishing your spirit.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can leave a conversation and just like, I'm having such a good time with you right now. Like I feel energized right now, you know, and there's other times where you feel kind of depleted around, you know, certain conversations and checking in around that too is interesting from a holistic point of view.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like not good or bad, but just seeing where we're energized and where we're depleted.
It's so true. Yeah. I think sometimes when I'm having a rough day and I'll just go to a run with all my friends and then I leave a different person, you know?
Totally. That's the best.
You just forget. And I think that's something, it's something that you said about group running, because I don't know how much of that you did, or maybe you ran by yourself.
Yeah, solo.
But I find like, especially in the winter, like I guess, you know, we're talking about time of year for cooking, how we tend to maybe cook differently while the weather outside doesn't help with our moods either. I don't think. And you got to think about that too. But, you know, if you need a way to get out of the house, call your friends up and go for a run, bundle up. But it just makes it that much more fun and it can keep you active. What's next for you and what you're doing and in your practice? And is there anything new and exciting happening?
I'm really in the zone of the day to day, to be honest. I'm hosting, I haven't promoted it yet, but I'll just mention it. I'm doing like a plant milk, which you're so welcome to come, a plant milk workshop, like a sesame milk workshop where like you make a bunch of recipes using the pulp. So it's like no waste, at this really cool spot, Espace Myland. It's like a co-working place in my neighborhood. So that'll be next month that I'm going to do just a community food gathering, you know, just get people around food and just do a little bit of a like educational demo for fun. I would love to do a retreat in the coming months or year or whatever, just to have that group experience. I love teaching. Like I taught at Concordia for a while, like doing cooking classes and around sustainability, and that really nourishes me. And whenever I do workshops and like talks with groups, I get so fueled. So it would be super dope to do a retreat somewhere and just have time outside in nature, movement, bit of breath stuff, and eating, cooking together.
Well, funny thing, I help organize a retreat.
No way!
A run retreat. Yeah, it's called the Outrun.
Oh, cool.
And it'll be, it starts April 30th.
Wow.
Till May 2nd. And we're gonna be heading out to like the Eastern Townships for this one. But we've been doing it for like 4 years. And I do it with a friend, my friend Ariane Rabi. It was her vision and her dream.
Cool.
We bring runners in. We have, you know, specialists there that host like workshops and talks, and
cool.
We cook for them all weekend and rent a big house. So we definitely have to keep you in mind.
Yeah. That sounds awesome.
For that. Yeah. We'll have some, for this one, we'll have, a mental skills coach there.
That's
awesome. Yeah. We'll have, and a few other awesome guests that will help. But yeah, it's nice to get out in nature and meet some new people and
totally
share some different ideas and stuff like that. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
If anybody's interested.
Yeah, I'm interested. Sign me up. Cool.
So we'll get some info. We'll maybe put that in the show notes for sure.
Brilliant.
But I don't know if you have any last things to share. Like I always ask our guests, you know, they're maybe more running driven, but maybe like, what does running mean to you? What is being holistic? And I guess like, what does it all mean to you? Because I think this talk, I originally wanted to dive into nutrition, but it's become so much more and really more of a holistic podcast. And so, you know, what does it mean to be, I guess, healthy?
Wow, what a question. That's an awesome question. Yeah, the word healthy has almost become loaded. You know, it's like, wow, there's like, I feel like it becomes like a, there's like pressure. I really think it's to summarize like everything that you and I just talked about, like, you know, going back for like the social, the like physical movement, tuning to the body, journal writing, hydrating, breathing, all of those things, like sort of a way of living. It's like being aware and mindful of the moments, the day to day, our bodies, our minds, what's going on with ourselves, you know, inside and outside of ourselves. It's about connection. It's about connecting with yourself, with others, with the earth. That's kind of how I see it. It's feeling connected. And that maybe is a really vague response, but it's kind of the best I can do, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think to be less hard on ourselves, you know, we can be so hard on ourselves around being healthy and like trying to be perfect and like trying to do this and that, and just giving ourselves a bit of a break, and like we're all just doing our best, you know, and just to keep being self-compassionate. I try and be, that's something I work on a lot with myself, is just being a little bit kinder to myself, the inner dialogue, you know. And I think with athletes, like that, having like that strong mindset and having really positive like thoughts while you're training and in general is really helpful. And I think in general in life, you know, we can learn from athletes around that, like just keeping really focused and like keeping in check with yourself and in tune with yourself in whatever ways that we can, and just being so that you're sort of a better human being in the world, you know, just trying to be connected to other people in a positive way, because we're all connected in that sense. So
So much of it is you know, being goal driven too, and or in your words, intention. But I love the word intention, and they cool. use it a lot in yoga too.
Yeah,
right?
They do. So yeah,
it's what is your intention with all this, like what it like like what's your why, and why are you doing the things that you do, right? It's there's more to it than that. What's your greatest accomplishment in all you've done?
Wow. That's a huge question. Yeah. Back to the word connection, like moments when I felt really connected to the people that I'm working with, to people in my life, to people I've meet traveling, like human connection, connecting with other human beings is just in a positive way that's really like mutually inspiring. Feels like an accomplishment. You know, it's not tangible. It's like a spiritual thing.
For sure.
I think the healthier and like the stronger relationships that we have, that I have, that I'm working on, I think that's a huge accomplishment. And just trying to share with others what I've learned for myself, to pass on things that could be of help or of service to other people. You know, I think like, what's the point of going through things in our lives if we can't like use that information and that like knowledge to help other people? Mm. So anytime that I have had the opportunity to do that has been like, for me, very healing and like just very like full circle, you know, like that feels like an accomplishment.
Paying it forward.
Yeah. Type of thing. And yeah, using your experience. What about you? What's your biggest accomplishment?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so many things that you can
draw on.
Yeah, yeah. Like just tangible, probably like doing Ironman
Doing
Boston. But
wow.
I think really getting involved in like in the community, and that, you know, the reason why this podcast is kind of what it is. Because, you know, I met some people that inspired me and it kind of threw me into this community world, and I got to see what the run community was all about.
Cool.
And it's like very separate lives that I lead. It's like I have my, you know, family and friends who I try and bring into that world, but then I have my like the running world, and it's and you try and intertwine the two of them, but just being I love like how much it's given me just as a like personally, and allowed me to push myself in ways I never thought I could. And you know, you draw inspiration from other runners, doesn't matter what the levels are. Like so many times I like to like back to what you're saying, like you're professional, you know, I never want people to feel like I can't run with them. with these group runs, a lot of times it's just to go have fun, run easy, like just enjoy it.
Amazing.
And I'm sitting at the back of the pack and I'm chatting with whoever's there and nice. Trying to make everybody feel comfortable because like we've all been there. Yeah. So just making everybody feel welcome. And I think it's either you're authentic or you're not. And people have said like running doesn't lie.
Mm.
But you know, you are who you are and everything kind of just like settles one way or another.
I like that. I like that. Thank you for that. That's really cool.
Kind of got
really
me beautiful. Off on a tangent there, but
love it. Loved it.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's community, whether it's
totally
whether it's what I'm doing or what you're doing. It's all able to intertwine and you know, what you're doing too can help the people that are listening. So
yeah.
Where can people find out more about you?
Sure. So my website is my name. It's DanielleLevyNutrition.com. And the Instagram is Danielle_Levy_, which will probably be in the show notes, I guess. It's a little bit hard to say it out loud.
Yeah.
You can email me. And if you want more info, if you want to learn a little bit more about my approach, I'm happy to have a chat with you on the phone and just see if we're a good match. And in general, just welcome any questions or comments and connecting with you.
And there's some beautiful photos there too that I saw.
Thank you.
Which is, you have a little bit of passion for photography as well.
Yeah, so. I do love it. Love it. It's a fun way to express myself, and especially food is just a fun thing to shoot and all you know, everything. Yeah, I have fun with that.
It always smiles. Food always smiles.
It's so true. And I love when people are like, oh, I'm so hungry now, you know? Yeah. Or even for myself, when I look at food photos, it's just like, oh, immediately. We eat with our eyes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you have to come out for a run with us on Monday. We run the mountain, so it's your favorite place to go. Oh, so
sweet. Thank you for the invite.
You're always welcome.
Thank you.
7 p.m. and meet some people and join in on the fun. But thanks so much for coming in today. It's been a real pleasure. Maybe not like the way our podcasts usually are, but I love the content and everything you had to say, and hopefully people enjoy it too.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem.
Have a good time. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday night at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit our website, iamarunner.ca, and check out their Instagram, @WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram, @TheRundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.